Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. We were expecting tables, ladders, and meh, but instead we got tables, ladders, chairs, excitement, the whole shebang. It's been quite an eventful week in the WWE, and here to join myself, Andy Wales. Well, it's been eventful, so he's had more time off than Kane, but he's back tonight. It's more chatter.
Yeah, Mr. Main Event is back. Thank you, Andy.
Is that yourself or Kane?
Perhaps both these days, but and both of us probably don't deserve that title either. But yeah, no, topped up the tan. I'm glad to be back. Batteries refreshed. So yes, and came back to a really, really good show from the WWE as well. So that was an added bonus.
It was a bonus because I've got to say, myself and Guy, we previewed the card last week. We were going through it and it wasn't particularly exciting. Obviously, the whole Shield reunion thing was getting people up and kind of looking forward to that. But looking up and down the rest of the card, other than, you know, getting our first sighting of Asuka on the main roster, there wasn't too much to get excited about. But then things kind of took an odd turn. Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt struck down by viral meningitis, and obviously we sincerely hope they do get better. I mean, it's there's a lot of illness going around the WWE, and kind of from nowhere, I mean, really a curveball thrown in from WWE was AJ Styles of SmackDown on there to take on Finn Balor, taking the place of Bray Wyatt, and of all things, Kurt Angle making his return to a WWE ring for the first time in what was it, 11 years to take Roman Reigns' place in the main event. What did you think when you initially heard that? I mean, obviously, apart from the fact that there was the illness there, but to bring in Styles from the SmackDown brand and to sort of shoehorn in Kurt Angle with any kind of a sort of a build towards it, do you think there was a slight essence of desperation in bringing those two into the card?
Yeah, I think there was. I'm not keen of, you know, cross pollination of talent between the brands. You know, when the brand split occurred last year, you know, this is something that we talked about, and I was keen to see the mistakes of the previous brand split not be repeated, and therefore for the two brands to be kept separate as far as possible. Obviously, when it comes to shows like WrestleMania and Royal Rumble, they have to come together. But other than that, there really should be no reason to see Raw and SmackDown talent appear on each other's shows. And that was one of the things that brought the brand split to an end in the first place. So, you know, I'm never keen on that. And obviously there's been an increase in all of that with, you know, commentators and interviewers working across both shows. But that said, it meant that we weren't going to see Bray Wyatt on the show, which immediately made the show better, because Bray Wyatt is just about my least favorite talent in the entire WWE these days. I just have no time for him whatsoever, just absolutely zero interest in anything he has to say or do. The number one reason for hitting the fast forward button when it comes to WWE programming. So that was good. With Kurt Angle, I thought that it was a shame that it ended up like this. I mean, I always felt that it was inevitable he'd work a match or matches at some point. But I would have liked to have seen him make his first return match in the WWE with more of a build beyond just the 24 or 48 hours that it had. All that said, though, it was quite a buzz created by the fact that Kurt Angle was working his first WWE match in donkey's years. And so certainly on social media, it did create quite a bit of chat. So that was good. And in fact, overall, it probably ended up benefiting the show overall, because both matches ended up being, certain highlights of not only the show itself, but of recent weeks and months on the WWE.
Yeah, for all of it, it was a slightly odd move. And so you say, you can have reservations over this and that, and a shame that, I've got to agree, yeah, it's kind of a shame that to have Kurt Angle's return to the ring be almost like a throwaway thing, such a short notice. But it worked, and that's the thing. Yeah, you're right, there was a buzz there. And I think the good thing was as well, for not just for the event, for people watching at home, but I think for the crowd, that really kind of helps that experience at home as well, is that gave a bit of a buzz to the crowd. They weren't just seeing the same old mundane show that they've been watching the past few months, really. So it was suddenly everyone was looking forward to it. And that anticipation, I guess, really summed up by, the first match of the night. I thought this, I've got to say more, I thought it was a great way to a great place to put Asuka as the opening match, because if you can't be on last, be on first. Crowd really up for it. The reaction she got was fantastic. And I've got to say, I do think Emma is an underutilized performer more. But I also have to say, I don't think a 10-minute 50-50 match was the best way to introduce Asuka, though. Especially when you consider the whole build-up to coming onto the main roster was about just how dominant she was in NXT.
Well, you're quite right. I mean, especially having a relatively even contest with somebody who's not really made much waves on the main roster in Emma. But that said, Emma has had some good outings with Asuka on NXT, so that was perhaps part of the reason for wanting to pair her with Asuka in her debut match on the main roster. And also, they clearly want to hold off on pairing Asuka with some of the bigger names, which they'll want to save for later on down the line, in the likes of Bayley, Sasha Banks, and co. And these are all opponents that most of them that she's worked with on NXT as well, and had some really, really good matches with them. But I thought, the match was a pretty good one. Asuka came across in the end quite strong. The reaction to her coming out was actually better than I thought it would be. So all things considered, it was a successful debut on the main roster, and really looking forward to seeing how they use her. I say that because there's been too many NXT talents that have come up from NXT this year in 2017 who have been handled quite poorly or disappointingly. The writers for Raw and SmackDown almost seem to have ignored what has helped some of these talents get over on NXT in the first place. And then they sit there a few months after wondering, well, why is such and such not over like he or she was on NXT? Mm-hmm. So I'm just hoping that they protect Asuka and try and retain what made a special on that developmental brand. And if they manage to do that, then she could be a real asset to the women's division on Raw.
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, when you make mistakes, you learn from the mistakes. But it seems that the WWE really don't learn from the mistakes that they make with all this NXT talent coming up. And I do wonder if they don't actually acknowledge that they are making mistakes with them, because, you know, if they are asking themselves how come they're not getting over so much, then purely just, it, you know, it's really simple. Just look at how they've been handled, and it just seems they keep repeating it, the same method over and over and over again. You come in 50-50 matches, you know, this whole parity booking thing. I will absolutely cringe if they throw away an unbeaten record very cheaply as well. I think that's something that's got to hold out for a long time. I've got to say more. What I think the way forward for Asuka would be if they tear up the card that they've been using for NXT talent and look instead to the way that they've used Braun Strowman since they did the brand split, and how they utilize Braun Strowman in that, you know, taking on jobbers and whatnot, but booking him very, very strong. And it, just the whole thing about it, being around how strong he is, that, you know, how he annihilates his opponents. And it doesn't, you know, how long he was protected before he even went into any sort of kind of significant feuds with any kind of other characters. They built his character up over such a length of time that he was so over. I thought he was so well protected, and I do hope they look more along them lines than, you know, the way that they've booked so many other of the talents that have come up from NXT.
Well, yeah, that's right. You know, they need to try and protect those talents that have that potential to be something special. And clearly Strowman was in the background as a member of the Wyatt family, but as soon as they broke him out as a singles talent, it soon began to emerge that actually they could really do something special with him. And he had that kind of throwback, kind of old school feel about him, didn't he, with that whole kind of monster kind of aura about him. And now Asuka obviously hasn't got that same kind of demeanor or aura about her in that way, but she's got a different kind of special feel to her, which she carries across from NXT. And they really need to try and ensure that it's not diluted by poor parity booking, as you mentioned earlier. And if they manage to do that, then, you know, she can have some really quite productive work to kind of deliver with the likes of Alexa Bliss, Sasha, Banks, Bayley, etc. And you know, that can certainly keep the women's division on Raw strong for quite a while. So you know, just hope that they don't mess up with Asuka, because if they do, then what hope is there for the rest of the NXT talent? If you know, arguably the most dominant talent that has worked on that brand for the last 2 years is wasted, then, you know, that certainly doesn't bode well for the rest of them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Next match up then was the Cruiserweight Tag Team match. Cedric Alexander, Rich Swann, beating Gentleman, Jack Gallagher, and the Brian Kendrick. Again, it's just another example of how disappointing the whole Cruiserweight division has been handled, in that, you know, there's a phenomenal talent in there, Cedric Alexander. I was really, really high on watching Jack Gallagher earlier in the year, but I've got to say, this was a match I just couldn't care less about. And that's, I find that quite sad, really, when you think of the potential and some of the talent that was in the ring there.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's funny because I actually quite enjoyed the match and thought it was quite a good one. I mean, it was booked in a way that you... it's hard to care about the outcome, about the individuals. You know, it was just a throwaway match in many respects.
Well, not so much the match quality, but the fact that people aren't engaged with it. You just don't really care. You're not emotionally invested in the match because nobody's really emotionally invested in the vast majority of the cruiserweights, and that for me is just it's a sad reflection of how, as a collective, they've been represented.
Yeah, the booking of the whole division has just been a complete shambles. And, you know, I still go back to the fact that I think that half the roster that they chose for 205 Live to begin with were not the right individuals. There were people that they chose who shouldn't have been included in that original lineup. I mean, they had the pick of the world's best under, you know, 205 and under talent, and you know, they needed a good mixture, and they needed some people with charisma. And other than Brian Kendrick to an extent, but then even with him, you know, we've seen him before, and you know, he was not a new face, he was not a new talent, and he worked in quite a subdued style, which is the complete opposite of what you'd want to see from your smaller guys. And then obviously Jack Gallagher, who's got a kind of a quiet, kind of quirky charisma about him, and Rich Swann, who's got the whole dancing thing going on. But the rest of them, you know, didn't really stand out in any way personality-wise. And, you know, personality is quite important for the WWE, because, you know, that's what fans are accustomed to, that it's not just about what you can do in the ring, it's about coming across like a star and coming across charismatic. And that's why the WWE recently decided to move Enzo into that division, because they felt that it needed an injection of personality and charisma, and obviously he has it in abundance. Unfortunately for him, his in-ring work leaves a lot to be desired. You know, they made a very poor first impression with 205 Live, and they've never recovered. And that's why the likes of Austin Aries have left, and Neville wants out. And you know, it's unfortunately a dead division, and no matter what they do, they just can't seem to resurrect it. And it's a crying shame, because there's so much good talent out there of that kind of size. But the whole delivery of this division has just been a complete botch. And again, they didn't learn the lessons from the Cruiserweight Classic when they got it so gloriously right. The whole thing was presented superbly, and everything that worked in terms of the format, presentation, they completely discarded with 205 Live. And then again, they sit there and wonder why it's not getting over. Well, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, well, that's I mean, well, you mentioned there Enzo Amore and Kalisto. They fought for the title. Enzo Amore's got the belt back again. Not a particularly good match. I'm not in any way engaged with Kalisto, although I know he can have some good matches and some good moments. I think he was probably best suited when he was in the tag team with Sin Cara, and they could show off their moves that way. I don't think this whole thing of bringing in Kalisto to the cruiserweight division has done anything. I'm not sure what that was supposed to achieve, or I guess understand what they thought they could achieve from it, but it certainly hasn't panned out in any way. That, you know, because just because he's a more established name, I don't think he's added anything to it at all. So we're back with Enzo Amore with a title, and I guess we're back to a champion that can talk and do nothing else.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they probably feel frustrated that they haven't got somebody who can talk and work. And the thing is, I mean, that's a bit harsh on some of the members of the roster, like, you know, Rich Swann, who's a decent talker and can work as well. But, you know, even with the likes of Rich Swann and co, you know, and even Jack Gallagher, which might be an unpopular opinion, but, you know, he's very good, but there are talents out there that are actually significantly better. And I'm thinking about the likes of Pete Dunne and the original United Kingdom champion, Tyler Bates, who, in my view, and I've seen both of those, and I've seen Gallo before he came into the WWE, those two individuals are certainly several levels above Jack Gallo. As good as Jack Gallagher is, and he's had some, you know, really good matches in his time in the WWE, he's not the level of those two guys yet. Those two guys rarely feature in the WWE, even though they're under contract. And these are the type of individuals that can really do something to bring this division to life. But, you know, they've largely persisted with the same roster that they pulled together a while back. And, you know, this is a collection of individuals that have largely struggled to get over. And, you know, most fans just are completely indifferent towards them.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Pete Dunne there. I mean, imagine Pete Dunne as a heel champion. You know, that Pete Dunne that we saw in that UK championship, that tournament, sorry. You imagine him, probably the closest thing that they could get to the heel persona that was Neville. You know, someone who could work and had that, was able to portray that nastiness. Do you think that will be something that we will see eventually?
Well, I'd hope so. I mean, as I say, he's under contract and he is their United Kingdom champion. But, you know, he's largely restricted to working indie shows. I mean, he's obviously putting the odd appearance on 205 Live. On NXT, rather. But, you know, he's somebody who's tailor-made for the 205 Live roster. And, you know, he'd really stand out because he has this charisma about him. He's got a great personality, comes across like a proper heel, and can work as well. And, you know, I think it'd be a breath of fresh air. He'd really bring some life to this roster, and it needs something because at this point in time, it's really on life support now. And they're persisting with it, but all it needs is Vince to say, look, it's just failed. Forget it. It's just taken up TV time that can be used for you know, more Bray Wyatt segments or more of Kane, or more big men just generally. So let's just get rid of all these midgets. And that's what Vince's view would be.
Oh, you're so cynical.
Speaking from bitter experience.
So moving across to back to the women's division, Alexa Bliss successfully defending the women's championship, the Raw Women's Championship against Mickie James. I've got to say, I think this is probably the best performance, the best match I've seen from Alexa Bliss. She's certainly not only has she become very good on the mic, she's really got a well-rounded character. Her ring work is really improving now. I enjoyed this match more. I really did.
Yes, it was very good. Credit to Alexa, though. She's really worked hard, you know, since she stepped up to the main roster. Clearly came up to the main roster knowing that there were the likes of Bayley and Sasha Banks and others who had that reputation of being top quality workers. When obviously she came up to SmackDown, which was a very, subdued division with the female roster over there. But, you know, she capitalized on that opportunity and certainly came across strongly in terms of personality, but still had some work to do in terms of her in-ring. But she did improve over on SmackDown. And since moving over to Raw earlier in the year, she's continued to improve and, you know, this is one of her best, if not her best, outing whilst being on the main roster. So that was really good to see. Mickie James is a solid hand as well. So, you know, she kind of played her part in making the match what it was. But, you know, it was a really good outing for Alexa Bliss, all things considered, because she came across like a star. Had a good match and got a good reaction. So, you know, it was something that enhanced her as a talent on the overall roster. So, you know, she has to be very pleased with how things are going for her career. But it was clearly a decision to just, keep her busy with any opponent other than, you know, the obvious ones before they line her up to compete and feud with the bigger names like Bayley and Sasha Banks again, and of course it's probably only a matter of time before she competes with her former nemesis in Asuka.
Yeah, that will certainly be interesting. Hopefully they do hold that one off and we have that sense of anticipation before we get Asuka into the title picture. But that's my personal view. Anyway, so as we mentioned, you know, AJ Styles stepped in for Bray Wyatt to take on Finn Balor. And more, if Balor against Wyatt was how not to use Finn Balor, then, you know, Finn Balor against AJ Styles, that is how you use Finn Balor. That's how you get the best out of him. That's how you get these exciting moments. And Raw and Kane we'll get to in a bit of how not to use him once again. But for now, if we concentrate on the positive, Finn Balor, AJ Styles, I really, really enjoyed this match. And for what it was, it just that sense of it just being a contest rather than any of these, you know, stupid, ridiculous storylines the terrible storylines that we've particularly seen involving Finn Balor of late. It just felt refreshing to see him just in the contest and involved in a great match.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that Paul Heyman used to talk about when he ran ECW was about accentuating people's strengths and hiding their weaknesses. And this was, as you say, kind of a good example of that. You know, it's evident to everyone that Finn Balor is somebody who's not a great talker. He's not a particularly strong storyline type performer, because for that you need to almost be a good actor. And now that's just not what Finn Balor's normally done throughout his career. I mean, he worked extensively in Japan, where it was very much about wrestling presented as sports, a bit like how it used to be here in the UK for decades in the World of Sport days. You know, that's what Finn Balor's used to. And this was more of a kind of match that he was more accustomed to in Japan. And it was just about two guys getting in there. And the story was very simple, you know, the very simplest that you can get in pro wrestling of, right, wrestler A is competing with wrestler B, and they're going to try and outperform each other and, you know, prove who's the better man. And, you know, that's what this essentially came down to. And, you know, they pulled off a superb match. And, you know, this was at last portraying Finn Balor in his strongest way. I mean, he's an exceptional in-ring worker, but he's really had little chance to display exactly what he's capable of, because for months now he's been lumbered with the useless lump that is Bray Wyatt, who's not a very good worker. And, you know, this whole storyline element with Bray is just not up Finn Balor's street. And you know, with AJ Styles, we all know just how good he is in the ring. So these two, you know, had a really, really good match, back and forth, you know, some great near falls. And good to see Finn Balor go over as well. I mean, it's about time that he got a good, strong win, and over a former world champion as well. That was certainly a good thing to see. All of that great work was obviously undone just 24 hours later, which we'll come on to. But no, well,
they had to build him up for Kane, though, didn't they?
Oh, God. yeah, well, we'll fear about that later.
We will get to that.
But no, I mean, these are two guys that were, you know, in the Bullet Club, and they had their kind of Bullet Club celebration post-match, and that was kind of good to see. And
fans, you know, enjoyed that as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's right. So doing the whole too sweet thing, you know, that was pretty cool. But yeah, as a standalone match, you know, it was a really, really fun 20 minutes.
I think it was good. It just kind of showed that you can do this on the main roster. Sometimes you can just present it as a contest, as if, like you said, as if it's pure sporting contest. Because I think sometimes, you know, they talk about this being the supposedly being the reality era. I think at times it just needs to be that, you know, quite simply, I want to beat you. You know, I want to be the champion. In order to be champion, I've got to get past you. So I want to beat you. I'm better than you. I want to beat you. We, you know, we don't have to have convoluted storylines all the time. You know, if there's that mixture, you know, not just everything storyline, you know, driven, that, you know, that has to be, you know, you cheated on my girlfriend or God knows what, or, you know, all these ridiculous things that they dream up for a reason for somebody to actually have a match. You know, it can't just be sporting. It can't just be storylines. If we have a bit of an even match, I think, like you said, that whole thing about, you know, accentuating the strengths, hiding the weaknesses, you know, that if you use them right, in the right way, that this is where you can, you know, really showcase the different types of talent that they have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, this is, you know, just something they need to learn about, because you know, they've got some exceptional workers on their roster, and despite that, they overall are under delivering in the ring. I mean, they just, as a company, are not putting on the you know, volume of great matches that they should be. No, and you know, you've got to bear in mind, I mean, we're living in a time now where pro wrestling is, certainly from an in-ring product perspective, on a worldwide basis, the best it has ever been. Yet you can't really say that for the WWE, because you know, we've had periods in the past where the in-ring product has been stronger, despite the fact that their roster is, certainly in terms of in-ring talent and really good workers, possibly as strong as it's ever been. But so many of the workers are just not getting the opportunity to show what they're capable of. They're almost on a leash. They're restrained. They're constrained. They can't just go out and express themselves. And, you know, that's why, you know, people like Neville want to just give up, because, you know, they take pride in their work. They see it as an art form, and you know, they're frustrated artists, and they'd rather go away from the biggest company in the business and have that freedom and have the shackles removed and be able to go out on weekends in front of crowds, which might only be 500 or 1,000, but feel happy about being able to do what they like to do best, rather than be told about, well, you've got to work 5 minutes. This is the way you're going to lay the match out, and everything being so overly prescribed and scripted. And, you know, there's a lot of frustration in the company amongst a lot of the talent, because, you know, it's clear that there's so much good talent there, and yet what we're seeing in the ring from the company overall is certainly underwhelming, despite the fact that we do get some good matches and some really good matches. This is a company that, based on the roster it has, should be delivering far, far more really good matches on a weekly basis, and we just don't get that.
Yeah, do you think there's a case of, there's a lot of wrestlers out there, that they're wrestlers, they love wrestling, they love the business, it's what they love to do, and that's what they want to do. They're not actors. They don't want to be actors. They don't want to be movie stars. They don't want to learn how to deliver lines. They just want to be great wrestlers. And I guess for them, that's what goes on in the ring. They tell a story in the ring rather than acting it out in pre-scripted dialogue behind the scenes.
Well, that's right. Absolutely. I mean, you know, most of the roster, you know, they've come through the independent scene and they turn up to shows, and all they have to worry about is, you know, planning out their matches with their opponents and going out there and having really good matches and having a good time, you know. And you've got the opposite when you turn up to TV on Raw and SmackDown, whereby, you know, straight away you've got to go and meet with the writers. And then they'll tell you, okay, this is what we've got planned for you. This is the script with your promo for segment 4 of the show. And then you've got to spend 2 to 3 hours, you know, firstly memorizing your promos, and then rehearsing it with your opponent and anyone else that might be involved, and then also then working with the match producers to kind of work through the match that the match producer has come up with. And you know, there are exceptions to that. You know, you've got people that are given more freedom about how they can cut promos and work their matches, but for the majority of the roster, you know, you've got to do as you're told by either the writers or the match producers. And it's a source of immense frustration for a lot of the talent that are, you know, on the roster, because you know, the creative freedom that they had elsewhere is taken away, and you know, they're just expected to go out there like robots and just perform and regurgitate lines that are given to them, which you know, normally they'd never use in real life. And that's what also results in promos that come across as unauthentic. And you know, then again, people wonder why talent don't get over. It's because you know, when people are cutting promos, it seems like they don't believe what they're saying. And you know, it makes a big difference. You know, if you look at, I don't know, Conor McGregor, he's an incredible promo, but and some of the stuff he'll come out with is stuff he'll script himself. You know, it'll be all pre-planned, you know, rehearsed stuff. But it comes across as real, it comes across as genuine, because he's got everyone believing in his gimmick, in his character, and they think it's real. And, you know, that's the kind of problem that WWE has, is that very few characters come across as authentic. You know, you've got maybe Enzo Amore that comes across, you know, when he cuts a promo, it feels real, because I think he does actually script a lot of his own stuff. But you know, the majority of the roster, we've seen it with Roman Reigns most notably in the past, they're given material that comes across completely different to how you'd expect that individual to speak, and you know, it just has the opposite effect to what the writers are looking for, which is to get these talents over.
We're in the unauthentic era, never mind the reality era. I don't think they'll try and stick that one on a box, though.
No.
But, I mean, well, to contrast that, going from Finn Balor, AJ Styles, I mean, that's what got us going before we went off on our tangents. To go from that to, the you know, a last-minute sort of thrown-in match of Jason Jordan and Elias, I enjoy some of these segments with Elias on Raw. I think the what he's doing, he does it well. But it felt like TV, you know, that these the moments that they were chucking it out a couple of times before they eventually then had a match, it just felt like something that should be on Raw. It wasn't really there for a pay-per-view. And I know they used it as the break before the main event, but it really kind of takes you out of the mood for the moment. And like you say, you know, to contrast going from real excitement and something that felt quite genuine and pure enjoyment watching Balor and Styles go at it to watching this, it was throwaway.
Well, yeah, I mean, it started with Jordan throwing vegetables and fruit and all sorts at Elias when he was singing earlier in the show, so that was just absolutely lame as anything. And then the match wasn't all that much better, and you know, the crowd really wasn't all that interested either. You know, Jordan's been a flop. You know, and this is where, you know, we've got a problem in the WWE, because you know, somebody like Jason Jordan is very good in the ring, but when it comes to personality, promos, being a storyline performer, he just lacks it. I mean, that's not to say that he can't improve and over time develop into a strong storyline performer, but at this moment in time, he just doesn't have it. And splitting him up from Chad Gable, I think, feels more and more like a mistake. Nobody believes the whole, you know, he's Kurt Angle's son storyline.
It's too ridiculous, isn't it?
Failure.
They ask us to suspend disbelief, and we're all willing to do that as fans. We know it's predetermined and everything like that. We know it's a glorified TV show, whatever however you want to you know, put it together. But, you know, we are prepared to suspend disbelief to an extent, you know, but there's some stuff that's just too far, even for wrestling fans, and we just go, not having that. And this is one of them, isn't it? It's one of them moments where you just go, oh, this is just too much. This is really too much. And I think it's a terrible gimmick that rather than helping Jason Jordan, it's actually hindering him even more.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. It's just a really dumb idea. That's not even speaking with the benefit of hindsight. It's something that immediately came across like a bad idea as soon as he walked through the curtain, and it was revealed that he was Kurt Angle's son. And you know, as bad as the whole thing started off, it's just gone from bad to worse. And they just need to kind of nix it in some form or fashion. I mean, it's just not going to turn around. It's just been a complete failure. And they just need to bring it to an end in some way and move on. Because if they don't, and if they try and persist with this, then Jordan's long-term prospects will not be good at all. And that would be a shame because, as I say, in-ring-wise, he's very good.
He is. I think the only way out of it is that it's a heel turn, and he reveals that he's not his son, and the whole thing was made up, and it was just a way for him to get his break, and he's just manipulated it. And then we have a match between Jordan and Angle. I think that's the only way out of this.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, absolutely. A heel turn, and it might be that as a heel, he might come across actually quite a bit more believable than he does as this kind of baby face son of Kurt Angle, because nobody believes that whatsoever. So they need to kind of reverse and, you know, U-turn out of this as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Hit reverse very, very quickly. Yeah, going from, well, I mean, talking something that's been very badly booked, I mean, to go to something that I think was well booked and really, really well laid out, especially when you consider, you know, all the last minute changes and the implications of just having such strong characters in a 3-versus-5 match. You know, a 5-on-3 handicap must be difficult to do, especially given that it's TLC. I've got to say the main event really, really delivered for me. I'm not sure about Kurt Angle in the Shield uniform. His head looks strangely massive. But on the whole, I did enjoy that main event. And I just thought the way it was laid out and the way it was executed, it was quite smartly done. And it worked for me. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a match that really divided opinion online. On social media, there was a significant section of the fan base, wrestling fan base, that absolutely despised this match, thought it was one of the worst matches they've ever seen. I was really surprised by how vociferous some people were about how bad they thought the match was. I'm with you, though. I thought it was a really good match. Now, I can understand why some people hated it, because now, certainly the kind of heel domination segment of the match seemed to go on forever. But in a way, it was a bit reminiscent of some of these, you know, epic Lucha Libre matches that we've seen in Mexico, where, you know, the heels dominate the baby faces, or the technicos, as they're called in Mexico, for ages and ages. And then you know, it looks like the technicos are completely doomed and they're going to lose the match, and then somehow they claw themselves back into it and ultimately win. And that's what happened here. I mean, it was more of a storyline type match, and there was a lot of smokes, mirrors and bells and whistles and all that kind of stuff. But it worked actually quite well in execution, and I thought that, you know, it worked really well in portraying Kurt Angle as in just about the right way, in fact, that he didn't come across like this part-timer that's been, you know, away from the business for loads of years, who's dominating his opponents which is one of my common criticisms of part-timers at work WrestleMania, because obviously he worked the match and then he was laid out and then disappeared for 20 minutes or whatever it was and then came back at the end. But at the same time, it had various other dimensions to the match as well, with Kane and Strowman and the kind of thing that went on between those two. And you know, Strowman's probably still in a landfill somewhere trying to dig himself out. And we had
that was it. That was kind of the subplot, wasn't it? As well as the match, we had this kind of build towards Strowman's next opponent, and it was I guess it's almost the follow-up to Strowman looking quite weak in the way that he did against Brock Lesnar, you know, one F5, 10 minutes, he's all done and dusted quite simply, really. And it's this whole building Strowman back up to be this, you know, a monster that's so scary and nobody wants to go near him that he has to, you know, that he's given another opponent that's big and fearsome and tall and, you know, over 300 pounds and he deals with him. So I guess this was the kind of the subplot, wasn't it? Was building towards creating this next opponent for Braun Strowman.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And I was fine with that. I mean, there were those who criticized the match that thought the whole thing made no sense whatsoever. But you know, when it was explained on Raw the next night, it just made sense. And even during the match itself, it made sense anyway. So I didn't really get that criticism. And we haven't even talked about Ambrose and Rollins. I mean, now these two are people that we've been critical of in different ways this year. And this was an opportunity for them to kind of regain some much needed momentum. But they were overshadowed by the fact that Kurt Angle's returning. But nonetheless, they still played their part in the match as well. And kept things together. And
I thought they carried the match at times, actually. I thought they carried it really, really well. And it's almost re-energized. This whole Shield thing has really kind of re-energized these two.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. And I think they, between them, enjoyed working this whole thing. And now perhaps they were disappointed that Roman wasn't there. But I'm sure they'll get a chance to have a proper reunion with the three of them later on down the line. And, you know, they needed something because, you know, certainly with Ambrose, his whole momentum is not what it was a couple of years ago. And even Rollins, really, I mean, he's obviously had some bad luck with injuries, but the whole run as a babyface has just not worked out for him. And, you know, coming together to reform the Shield might be just a thing to help them take a different direction and regain some momentum as singles performers again. I think for the time being, you know, this is about as good the use of them as the bookers can come up with. So, you know, credit to the writers for that then. That's worked perfectly fine. And then obviously in the end we had Angle go over the Miz in terms of the pinfall after the kind of Roman Reigns powerbomb spot. And for me that worked perfectly fine. It didn't really hurt the Miz in any way as far as I'm concerned. And you know, Miz certainly had various moments throughout the match when he was allowed to look quite strong. So I've really got no criticism about the way this match was booked. I thought it was very enjoyable. The fans live clearly enjoyed it as well and got a good reaction. So, you know, all things considered, thumbs up to the match and thumbs up to the show.
Yeah, I've got to say the same. I thought it was a fun end to a good pay-per-view. And that was it, you know, going into the event. Well, a few days before the event, there wasn't too much in the way of anticipation for it. But, you know, yeah, things took a turn and it ended up being a good show, a good main event. And, yeah, quite enjoyed it. So we've alluded to it. let's get to Raw then. Where better to start then with Balor and Kane. You know, having spoke about how this was refreshing to see Finn Balor used this way positively and definitely the right thing for him to go over, that whole kind of thing of, yeah, Balor's strong again. Look, they've built him up and maybe they're going to use him in the right way. He's given his cannon fodder to Kane, who we've, you know, until the week before, we hadn't seen in around a year. I mean, I've got to say, what on earth is that more? Really is, for me, it's stupidity, because you can see from a million miles away, it's just a way of trying to make Kane look strong before you feed him to Braun Strowman and nothing else. So Finn Balor is a sacrificial lamb for another storyline.
Absolutely. This is just absurd, quite frankly. Now, Finn Balor, you know, the company shouldn't forget, was a person they put their Universal title on just some, not even 15 months, about 14 months ago. And they put him over really, really strong, you know, within his first few weeks on the main roster. After stepping up from NXT, and obviously he was very unfortunate to sustain an injury, was out for quite a while, and since returning this year, the way he's been portrayed, the way he's been booked, has been extremely disappointing. Because, you know, Finn Balor's another one. You know, we talked about special talents and how they should be protected, and we talked about Strowman and Asuka. Well, you know, Finn Balor is one of those. You know, he's not a run-of-the-mill type individuals who just can blend into the background. If he's booked in the right way and protected, you know, he can be a real asset and can be a real bona fide superstar for this company. But you know, all that's happened by the writers is exposing his weaknesses, the fact that he's not a very good promo. You know, instead of keeping his promo short, or, you know, maybe give him only a promo every few weeks, they're giving him long promos every single week, almost to say, look, everyone, this guy isn't very good. And perhaps it's Vince, you know, trying to kind of win over the point he always wants to make, which is this should be about sports entertainers and it's not about wrestling. And maybe
bodybuilders.
Yeah,
about six foot five inch bodybuilders.
We need more of them. So yeah, I think it's all part of the game that's being played you know, behind the scenes in the WWE, and Balor is an unfortunate victim of that. And you know, this is something that obviously outraged large sections of the audience. But when the WWE pulls this kind of shit, then that's when the more hardcore elements of the fan base really rally behind an individual that they think is being unfairly treated. And we saw that most notably with Daniel Bryan. And the more the company tried to suppress his kind of momentum, the more the hardcore elements of the fan base, who really do attend in vast numbers at the bigger shows like Survivor Series and WrestleMania and Royal Rumble, the more vociferous their support became at those shows for Daniel Bryan. And, you know, come Survivor Series, I wouldn't be surprised if Finn Balor actually gets a good reaction, one of the strongest of the night, because, you know, he's certainly a very strong favourite amongst that particular element of the WWE fan base. So yeah. The booking was just nonsensical. And in fairness to Kane, you know, he's a very humble, he's not one of these egotistical types who likes to put down and go over younger talent. You know, it was clearly the decision made by the writers and most likely Vince. He wants to keep Kane strong, you know, in readiness for ultimately putting over Strowman. But, you know, they could have had Kane go over one of several dozen other talents, but they decided for it to be Finn Balor, and that's just a joke.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I wasn't angry myself. I was just kind of dismayed and just thought, just shook my head thinking, what a dumb move. You're just hurting your own product, but there you go. On Raw, you know, they announced, obviously, that's coming out. It started last week with the whole Brock Lesnar and Jinder Mahal thing, and they announced obviously all loads of the matches coming up for Survivor Series. We won't go into the matches because we'll do that in due course. Obviously, once we get closer to Survivor Series, we will do a full preview. But one more thing from Raw SmackDown, and I was keen to get your thoughts on this more, was this whole Under Siege, this hashtag Under Siege, the SmackDown superstars turning up on Raw. I personally wasn't such a big fan of it. I know some fans will probably enjoy some of the moments. I just felt people like, certainly like for Shinsuke Nakamura to be involved in that, for me, he came out of that looking like just a mid-card guy and not a particularly important guy. They go around and you've got established baby faces going around storming people in the back. It just, the whole thing, I for me, wasn't necessarily the best way to play it out. What about yourself? I mean, did you enjoy, do you think it was well done, or were you more along the same lines as myself?
Well, again, it's probably an idea that seemed good on paper, but in practice, it just didn't work. And it was just a very, very bizarre finish to Raw. The whole thing, I mean, where, you know, you've got pretty much all of the talent from SmackDown Live turning up, half of them obviously faces, almost being presented as heels on this, you know, end of Raw, in itself was quite strange in a way, when you see people that are very clear baby faces like Nakamura going around trying to find people backstage and beating them up, and then hunting down Kurt Angle and, you know, escorting him to the ring, and Shane then getting in his face and saying, I want you to bring your gold medal, what's left of your Raw roster, and we're going to finish what we started. Yeah, okay. So that was just, it was designed to try and get people talking and away from the usual, okay, here are our five for the Raw versus SmackDown, and then SmackDown saying, okay, here are our five. And I guess the way that this is going to play out over the next several weeks is when they appear on each other's shows, the heels, and obviously when they're on their own shows, their faces. But, yeah, the whole way it was all done was just a bit too hokey and convoluted and confusing. So it didn't work, and it was not something that I think came across particularly strong. And certainly the reactions of the fans live suggested that it wasn't something that came across particularly strongly on a live basis either. So it was somewhat of a fail.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't alone there. Just for me, it was one of them ideas where, like you said, it probably felt like a good idea at the time. But again, if you really think it through, and all the what ifs, yeah, but, what if, yeah, but, and start to look at it, and what does that do for some of the talent that's involved, and how ridiculous does it look? Yeah, it's not particularly a good idea. And I think there was more than one way to present it. I think it could have been presented differently, and it then perhaps would have got over. But yeah, I think what you said, hokey, was the really good thing, because it was almost to me as though they were kind of trying to recreate that whole ECW thing from years ago when a lot of them turned up, and it failed spectacularly to get anything like that atmosphere and that kind of a feel to it. And I just hope that this is not what we're going to see now for the next few weeks until we get to Survivor Series, is this back and forth like this, because I want to really look forward to some of their matches, and this whole idea of it being Raw versus SmackDown, and that hookiness. I'll get so bored of seeing it by the time that to Survivor Series comes around. I think I'll have lost interest by that point if that's what we're going to get week on week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'd like them to come up with some better ideas. I'm pretty sure we won't get the same kind of invasion things going on every single week. I'm sure they'll kind of mix it up and learn from the reaction. And you know, WWE, you know, they do pay attention to the reaction to you know, certainly the key angles on social media, and I'm pretty sure that you know, a lot of the fan base reacted quite negatively. But all of that said, ratings for SmackDown this week were higher than usual, perhaps because of the way in which the end of Raw panned out. So maybe they thought, okay, well, that kind of worked because it was different, so let's try and come up with something maybe not the same but similar. And so yeah, who knows what the end of Raw will be next week. But yeah, I think we'll certainly see you know, people going back and forth from Raw and SmackDown onto the opposite roster shows, certainly until Survivor Series is done and dusted. And yeah, I'm pretty certain there are better ways of making the angle work, and it didn't get off to a good start. But on the positive note, you know, it can only get better.
Exactly. And the positive note is where we will end, because that wraps up this this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Don't forget, you can keep in touch with us, as we always say, at PW_index is our Twitter handle. Don't be afraid to get in contact with us. Share your thoughts, give us your opinions, and ask us questions if you so wish. If you want to put some questions in there, I will ask them. I will ask more of them for you. No problem at all. So as always, my thanks to Mo Chatra for joining me tonight. And we want to thank all of you, as always, for listening in and hitting that download button. But until next time, from me, Andy Wales, and from Mo Chatra, here at the Pro Wrestling Index, it is bye-bye for now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.